Gurudev, thank you for joining us today. So you have a huge following on social media, and just for context, that's about 7 million on YouTube, 5 million on Facebook, 4.1 on X, and about 3 on Instagram. Do you consider yourself as a bit of an influencer with this kind of engagement that you get with sort of millions of people around the world?
Well, today what I'm teaching or what I'm giving, these techniques are very, very useful to people, and we need it because it caters to the mental health of our population. Then post-COVID, the mental health has become a very big challenge in the world. You know, we want a happier world, right? Everyone wants to be free from stress. People want to feel happier, feel better. For all this, you need meditation and yoga, meditation, and some techniques that would help one to, you know, get rid of the tension. And so that's very, very important. Not only that, today's time people are feeling very lonely and looking for the purpose in life. And, you know, unless and until there is clarity in the mind, nothing works, right? So these techniques gives you more clarity, and it deepens one's vision and takes you to a higher plane, which one is seeking knowingly or unknowingly.
In modern times, the word influencer has very different meanings today. How do you define the word influencer?
Well, I would not give too much importance for influencer, but I would say what's necessary is for one to be centered and stable in oneself. You know, you can get influenced by something for a short period of time, but if you are inspired from within, that stays with you. So I'm more an inspirational speaker than an influencer, I would say.
And what exactly does your role as a modern day guru consist of?
To bring happiness to people and to make them realize that they can live a more conscious life. You see, there is more awareness, more conscious, and we need to create the more conscious planet. That's for sure. Whether it's environment or it's mental health or it's other challenges that we face in today's life. Yeah.
We know you've had a lot of success in your life. Are there any regrets on things you wish you'd done differently?
Not so far. Yes, of course I would wish to do more in the conflicting zones that's looming around in the world today. So many different conflicts are coming up. And what we are teaching definitely helps people to have more clarity in their mind, more harmony in their attitude. And I wish I can do more in this Israel and Palestinian conflict or Ukraine and Russian conflict. As I have seen that what we are giving has helped people to come out of the conflicts in many areas.
In your time as a renowned spiritual leader, have you ever been challenged by others trying to do what you do? And more importantly, doing so by spreading the wrong message?
There are many such challenges do come, and that gets people to be, disillusioned. But you can't avoid those sort of things. So I continue doing what I need to do, yeah.
Earlier we mentioned about the huge following you have on social media, which comes with commercial benefits. Is this how you're able to fund some of the things that you do?
No, I keep it mostly charitable, because our work is all charitable and we are doing a number of work around the world. So I'm not so good at the business angle of it. But I do encourage people to do ethical business, of course. So we have instituted an award for World Culture for Forum for Ethics in Business, and we've instituted an award for ethical business people that we give once a year in collaboration with the European Parliament.
In the context of all the work that you do, are you aligned with a particular faith, and how do you approach when leaders from various religious groups seek your wisdom?
Oh yeah, I interact with all the religious groups, and because faith-based organizations are part of any democracy, a part of any society, so we need to nurture that aspect also. So of course, what we teach is very non-denominational spirituality, but we are not anti-religious, so we really work with all the religious groups and organizations around the world. And every 4 years we conduct the World Culture Festival, in which we invite people of all faiths to come together. Recently we had, last year in Washington DC, where we had 1.1 million people assemble, and people from all faiths, the Catholics, and the Protestant, the Buddhist, Hindu, Jain, Sikh, everyone participated, including the Aboriginal faiths. And that was a very grand success.
I want to get your thoughts on the caste system in India, and for people who don't understand, it's the social classification pyramid that divides sort of Hindus into four groups, including sort of cleaners at the bottom and priests at the top. Do you think it's an outdated system in modern society?
The caste system developed as for workforce, but today, that's no more relevant. It's actually, this has been there in all societies in the world. The royalties have their own class, the business have their own class, the labor has their own group. You see, laborers have their own association. So, but the castes, the origin of caste system, if you see, there has been people from all different castes have been admired as saints. In fact, the highest divinity or godhead in our Hindu culture, like Ram and Krishna, they are not from the upper caste. They come from the second and third level of caste system. In fact, caste system was a professional arrangement rather than through birth. In this sense, this is a sign of a very civilized society. But discrimination about that, which has been fought by many, many saints throughout the ages, right from Adi Shankara, they all said, the caste system is not by birth, it is just a professional arrangement, and there is no up, high and low in the caste. All are equal. This message has been given by the Vedantic philosophy, not once, but many a times. But you see, sometimes it's very easy for politicians to use the caste system to get to power. That's one disadvantage in the system, that it is not allowed to die or disappear, like it has happened in the urban areas. In the villages, it is still kept alive, because it's very convenient for politicians.
What are your 5 tips or advice for the next generation for coping with the stress of modern life? That's news, war, climate change, cost of living. And in each of these 5 tips, how did you come to learn these yourself, these lessons? And are there real examples that you've been faced with?
We need to broaden our vision. Today, the political and geographical boundaries doesn't matter much. COVID has taught us very clearly that a small virus, which you can't even see, has broken all the boundaries. So we must think beyond our political boundaries. So prejudice against race, religion, gender should be done away with. Even today we have prejudice against women, what we see in Afghanistan and some parts of Africa. It is so pathetic. So we must get rid of prejudice against gender, then prejudice against religion, that's even more poisonous. What we see in the Middle East today is again, you know, the religion is one of the cause for the religion is taken as an excuse for a war. So there again we have to rise above that and see the unity of human race. And of course the environment, we all have to come together. We have only one planet. We are consuming more than what the planet can produce and give us. So it's pertinent today for us to get back to the basic ethics, that we need to care for the planet, care for humanity as one world family.
Three more questions quickly. Spreading the message of peace and humanitarian support is more important in war zone and conflict areas, as you sort of just touched on. Does Out of Living Foundation have a presence, influence or impact in the current global areas under strife? And if so, how do they manage to do so safely?
Oh yeah, we have been working in Iraq quite a bit. Even during the war, people were there treating the people there for trauma relief. We have catered about 700 women in Iraq, in Baghdad alone, you know, for 700,000 women. We have been treating them for trauma relief. And then PTSD syndrome, which the soldiers go through, we have been treating them in U.S. also, about 8,500 war veterans have been treated to the programs that we teach, which has tremendously helped them. And we try to bring people together, heal their hearts and, you know, heal their wounds and make them get back to the track. We're trying to do that. Even today we have our volunteers working in Syria, caring for the children who could not sleep for days, for months after the bombing and all, you know, and get them back on track. We have programs for them. The European Union has sponsored our work. And with United Nations, we have been working in many such areas. In Colombia, of course, everybody knows that how we could do the forgiveness process with the FARC militants and get them back on track and agree for the peace agreement. So we, as a small NGO, we try to do wherever we can, whatever we can. Even now, we are giving programs for the soldiers in Ukraine, for them to get over anxiety and sleeplessness and, you know, all that mental health issues. We're doing our best what we can. But still what we do is just a drop in the ocean. There's so much more to be done.
With so many belief systems available, it can be overwhelming for a young person to know which spiritual path to follow. What's your advice for someone who feels lost but is eager to begin their spiritual journey?
Just start with meditation. Start with breathing techniques. You know, sky techniques is a wonderful way to start. Sky breathing techniques. And then meditation would be very good. It opens the door for you, for your inward journey. Path is not so important. What is important is the goal, that you reach the goal.
Thanks for your time, Gurudev. Appreciate it.
Thank you.